You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Just over a week ago in Washington, the J. Craig Venter Institute went public with an announcement that their lab has developed a new life form, a synthetic, self-replicating microbe. On the other side of the planet, the UN Convention on Biological Biodiversity was meeting in Nairobi and issued a call for the establishment of global rules over synthetic life forms. The ETC group has a long record of monitoring biotechnology developments and advocating for ethical, just, and environmentally sustainable uses of technology. They were in Nairobi calling for a global halt on research pending the development of global regulations on synthetic life. Pat Mooney is the executive director of the ETC group, and he joins me on the phone now. Hello, Pat.
Good morning.
What exactly did the J. Craig Venter team succeed in doing that's different from previous genetic engineering milestones?
Well, they really have made artificial life for the first time. They took a model of an existing microbe, a very simple one. They kind of stripped it down to its bare DNA, to the most fundamental functions that would make it live. Then they replicated that synthetically. They built literally base pair by base pair an entirely new DNA out of the key elements, the A, C, G, and the T. And then we're able to take that nucleus and put it into basically like an egg yolk or an egg white of another living organism and make it self-replicate. So we have a life form that's never had parents. It's completely new and different from anything we've seen before, even though it's modeled after an existing microbe.
And not one that's been shaped by evolution.
Not at all.
Now, the article in the journal Science makes some ambitious claims. What are they saying about the promises of this particular synthetic organism?
Well, it's like all new technologies. It's going to solve all our problems. If you go back to nuclear power, even, and certainly the original biotech initiatives of 25, 35 years ago, everyone always said that this is going to solve the problems of energy, the problems of food crises, take care of climate and all of our environmental concerns. It'll do everything for us. We're being told that again with synthetic biology.
Now, your organization describes this as a quintessential Pandora's box moment. What's at stake here?
Well, they've done something very simple in the sense of just making a microbe, and that microbe, I'm sure, wouldn't live outside the test tube, much less the laboratory. But they've shown the proof of principle that we can actually make synthetic life, and we can design DNA to perform whatever functions, be whatever way we theoretically would like it to be. That has a huge implication for the biological diversity that exists on the planet. If something of this kind is allowed into the environment, we can't be sure how it will function, whether it will interbreed with other species, mutate, and so on. So we have to be very concerned about that. We're just not prepared, I think, as a society around the world to address something as profound as this in terms of the ethical implications, the social implications of someone being able to build life to order.
Now, the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity met in Nairobi, as I mentioned, this month, and their subsidiary body on scientific, technical, and technological advice issued a draft text aimed at preventing the release of Cynthia without further research on environmental effects. What clout does this resolution have?
It has quite a bit. The Biodiversity Convention itself has 193 country members. It's a legally binding convention. The draft moratorium that they proposed was supported by 192 of the 193 countries. The only country that publicly opposed it was Canada. Regardless of whether Canada had opposed it or not, it would have gone forward to the ministerial meeting where the ministers of the environment come together from around the world, which will take place in October of this year in Nagoya, Japan. So it will go there and will be debated there, and there's a reasonably good chance that, in fact, there will be unanimous consent that there should be a moratorium at this stage.
And I understand that ETC has been involved in the past in some successful implementations or moratoriums on genetic engineering.
In several areas, this will be our fourth, in fact, through the Biodiversity Convention. It's interesting that governments tend to obey them. They tend to not want to be seen as opposing, even though it's a voluntary moratorium, they don't want to be seen to opposing it. The United States, for example, is not a member of the Biodiversity Convention, yet it attends all of the meetings with a large delegation, and it adheres to all of the decisions.
And what kind of oversight is there now of synthetic biology and the way these technologies are deployed?
Well, depending on who you're asking, it's either all and lots of protection or none. There are rules regarding the transboundary shipment of genetically modified organisms, but the definition of genetically modified is not clear, and so where this is not really a modified organism, it's an absolutely new organism, it may be able to escape some of the of those regulations and be allowed to be moved across borders without governments even being aware of it. It's governments, even where they do have regulations in place regarding lab rules and all that kind of thing, can't really monitor them. And the amazing thing about synthetic biology is that it really treats life as Lego and designs life forms. The things that Craig Venter was able to do in his lab this time are things that he claims, and others claim as well, could eventually be done by almost anybody, almost anywhere. It's a very simple approach to building life means that instead of kids sitting around playing with Lego blocks, they could end up building their own things, their own life.
Do you have specific concerns about the Craig Venter Institute in terms of their track record on ethical environmental issues?
Well, they have a high success rate in terms of their scientific advancements. Craig Venter himself was the scientist who led the private sector's effort to map the human genome in the late 1990s that sort of culminated in the first map in the year 2000. He's been a pathbreaker in terms of being able to map other genomes of other species as well, including his own dog and himself. He decoded himself completely and put it on the internet. So they're very successful. They're not very good at consulting, and they're not very good at dialogue with society. And our worry is that, but they are very good at getting money. I have to add that they've got $600 million from Exxon, and they've got, I think it's more than $100 million more from BP to develop synthetic life forms in terms of the energy industry. And I am worried they will just go full speed ahead without consulting, without having a dialogue with society or with governments, and governments will be caught flat-footed as they usually are in trying to address a new technology once it's actually been commercialized.
Now, I just learned that 2010 is the UN Year of Biological Diversity. How does the development of a new lab-produced synthetic life form mesh with the fact that we're currently seeing such an accelerated rate of the loss of existing and natural species?
Well, we find it alarming because we think that you could actually... synthetic biology could actually lead to the more rapid destruction of the existing biological diversity. It is certainly true that you could, with synthetic biology, develop more unnatural biodiversity in a test tube than you have of natural biodiversity in the Amazon, and that's not necessarily a good thing. A couple of years ago, we had a meeting at the United Nations in Rome where one of the other leaders in this field, Drew Endy from Stanford University, told governments that they didn't need to really worry about biodiversity because he could build for them whatever they lost, which was a kind of hubris that I don't think was appreciated by the governments there.
Wow. Seems to kind of ignore the whole influence of environment and evolution.
Absolutely. I mean, there really is an assumption here. The scientists who are involved in synthetic biology are mostly engineers. I mean, like civil engineers. They don't know anything about biology particularly. They assume that life is basically circuitry, that you can simply piece together strands of DNA to perform the functions you want them to perform. And they're half right. There's some truth to that. But half right isn't good enough when you're tinkering with the nature of the planet itself.
I want to come back to what you mentioned earlier. What's your response to Canada's stance at the UN in Nairobi?
Well, it's becoming tragically typical. Again, we've been involved in four moratoria in the last decade, and in each case, one of the major opponents to each of these has been Canada. It's a very ornery attitude that we have a tremendous faith in science in Canada means that we let the scientists do what they want to. There's also a sense, particularly in the United Nations context, where the U.S. has been absent often and particularly in this case, where Canada sort of acts on behalf of the United States, since the U.S. can't really vote in these sessions, Canada sort of takes its positions for it. And that's very sad.
What's next for the ETC group and your partners on advocating on this issue?
There's legislation now in the U.S. Congress that's helpful, and we're hoping to encourage them to pass that legislation. They are holding hearings about synthetic biology. I think it has scared them a little bit. We're hoping to have more debates in other countries around the world. The big battle will be in Nagoya, Japan, at the end of October, when, again, ministers of the environment come together under the Biodiversity Convention and debate this moratorium and whether or not they want it to be effectively to become law.
Well, I appreciate your joining me this morning, Pat.
Glad to be with you.
I've been speaking with Pat Mooney of the ETC Group. For more about this issue, visit their website at etcgroup.org.